Mary Ida Hendrickson has a book release coming up on Saturday, December 16th from 1 to 2:30 at the Tongass Historical Museum. And this book is an artist's quest for the ancient truth, the mystery of the fire trees of Southeast Alaska. And Mary Ida Hendrickson is here to tell us more about that book. And before we start, I'm going to say she put something on the table in front of me, and I'm very curious as to what is that?
Those... When I moved into my cabin, I was told that they were oil lamps that were found on the beach. And I went, well, that's handy because, you know, they're small, they're portable. We're looking at something about the size of my palm, and this one's covered with barnacles, so it's obvious. And they're both made from the same stone. Well, as I was researching the book, I gave them a new purpose and probably the original purpose. I think these are fire carriers. I found an old tree on my property that was charred, as many of us have seen throughout southeastern Alaska. And, you know, the kind of tree you can walk into and it's all burned on the inside. And I think that I was told that that's where the natives stored their fire.
So can you talk about fire trees? What exactly are fire trees?
Fire trees are where the natives stored their fire. And when you're cold and wet, what do you want to be? Warm and dry. And instead of rubbing two sticks together, the natives had a system for keeping embers alive.
And how can you identify a fire tree?
They're like a burned-out chamber and a red cedar.
And so they would burn the interior of the tree?
It would get there. They would start at the center and burn from the center out.
And so it would just continue smoldering?
Why not?
For a while?
Yeah.
And then it kind of hollows the tree out?
For decades, for scores of years.
And this, are these done on dead trees? How
no,
are the trees
selected?
No, live
trees. The trees are still alive.
They still live.
Mm-hmm. They're still alive. And they're big. They're old growth. They're everywhere. And everybody has seen one. And if you want, I can read a couple of pages from the book just to show you how I found out. Okay. At the turn of the century, Captain Snapper Carson of Ketchikan, Alaska, was towing a bundle of cedar siding from his sawmill to my cabin in Clover Pass. Snapper mills timber from beach logs using a salvage permit issued by the Forest Service. He also takes logs culled from commercial rafts that break up in storms and drift ashore. I rode with him as his boat made his unhurried voyage. Now, this is chapter one of the book. Snapper has a heavy-duty aluminum work skiff, much better for towing than my lightweight skiff. Once underway, he told me going slow is the best way to study the shoreline, the best way to notice differences and changes. This was true wisdom, especially from a mariner who has piloted packers, slow-moving tugs all over southeastern Alaska, often running the same course. And that's how he spotted the tree that would take me on this journey that you are sharing. We were working the tides, arriving at high slack to ensure the lumber could be left high up on the beach, easier for me to carry to the building site. We secured the load, anchored the boat on the outhaul, and walked into the woods. "Oh, you've got one of those trees," he said. The tree to which he referred was a huge burned-out red cedar common on the shores of southeastern Alaska. Doesn't everyone, I thought? But I asked him what he meant. That's where the natives stored their fire. Despite the decades I'd lived in Alaska, this was news to me. I'd always thought that these trees were altered by lightning strikes or by kids with matches. However, lightning hits the top of a tree. Mine was burned from the bottom. I never knew anyone who set fire to a tree, nor did I ever have a desire to do so when I was a child. In fact, it never occurred to me to burn a living cedar purposefully for any reason. And the story goes on. And that's what they are. And you can see, and of course, this is radio, but that's the size of the tree. They're huge.
And how did you go about doing research on this? You know, you had this story by him, but then I imagine you went forth to verify and find out more information.
Well, like everybody else in the area, I usually take a summer vacation to some outlying island or whatever, and I started noticing them and seeing them in a way. I would ask myself the question, how would I use this? And once I got to Duke Island, I saw one that was just a totem carved into a tree. And to me, that seemed like asking the tree permission to burn it. You know, just conjuring up what I would do. And so I went back to the studio. I started drawing it, and I noticed that it was, in fact, a totem. Before, it looked just like a scar. It was so weathered. And I did a series of paintings on it, and the paintings more or less informed me as to what was happening. I would put aspects in the paintings that would later alert me to purposes that perhaps I should share or become aware of, or I guess examine the scope of their uses. In other words, it's huge. I'll tell you one thing that just really blew my mind was on the trail at Settlers Cove, which finally I could write a book about it because most of these trees are on private property, or they could be sacred sites. I don't, you know, and I'm not somebody who can judge that. But there at Settlers Cove, there's three or four of them. And when I found that out, well, then I could write the book. And I went up to Juneau and asked permission from Dr. Rosita Worrell, who is head of the Sea Alaska Heritage Center, or Sea Alaska, Heritage Institute. So the one on the top trail at Settlers Cove, there's just a sign that says Hollow Cedar Tree Beach Trail. If you go to that tree, I took pictures of it and I did sketches from it. And when I was drawing it, doing the finished drawing, I noticed that there were slash marks about 15, 20 feet up the bark. And then I studied it more closely, and it was three trees that had been tied together to become a fire tree. And what was shocking about it was they weren't planning for winter. They were planning for generations down the road. It was a highly sophisticated, technologically savvy society that lived on this coast. And these trees informed me of that in many, many ways.
And you are an artist, and you did, I believe, a series, did you not, of fire tree paintings?
I did a whole series of the totems of the asking tree and how it deteriorated over the years and became a chamber. I also I have photographs in the book of finding the right kind of tree to burn into. Cedar trees start with a sapling. And that sapling doesn't generally have the preservative powers as the tree itself. So it would be a punky center, real like powder or like dust. And you could start the fire there and it just burned for forever.
Do you know how the trees were selected? Which trees? Did you find anything about that? Was it the size of the tree or?
Well that is exactly it. Well, the trees are still growing, of course. So maybe they were picked young. But no, it's... There's so much more things that can be done with it, with this idea. But chopping into the center of a tree with tools that they had at the time, the Alaska Natives had at the time, was a chore. So getting there and finding out it's a punky center, in other words, it's not good for a lot of things that will start a fire. Also, it should be near a village. And the ones that aren't near villages... known sites or obvious sites, well, then they have a different purpose. And they could be, and that's what the chapters are about. I have one about cooking. I have one about navigation and other little ideas that I may have that prevented this book from being published for a long time because nobody believed it.
And so are they, again, verifiable, or it's that the impressions you got from them and you think that is what their purpose was, as opposed to having, you know, some kind of evidence, archaeological evidence or whatever it may be?
Thank you for that question. That tells that. Mother, my impressions. Nobody owns this. This isn't my story. It's not a university story. It's not an it's my impression as Dr. Worrell said, she said, it needs further investigation, which is a great excuse for serious beachcombing.
And why did you decide to put it in book form, create a book?
What else am I going to do? I mean, it just seemed obvious because I wanted to share what information I had. I mean, they are fire trees. They are a place to store fire. Snapper told me that. His father told him. A Simsian from Annette Island told his father that that's what they were.
So it might spark further conversations and discussions with people.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope more comes out of it because it's so much fun. Not because I can't do it anymore. I can't. It's hard for me to climb mountains anymore because I've lived here for decades, and it's a great example of something to do.
And you have obviously photographs in there, drawings, so people can kind of see what they look like, and perhaps as you're on a trail, notice them more.
Well, right? You've seen them before. You just didn't understand the purposes. Or understand what the purposes could be. I'm not saying what that everyone is. One of the things that I didn't mention in the book was the insides are real dark. So I decided I was going to take pictures with a flash inside. And when I got home and downloaded on the computer, they were clean. And they were clean with a sharp instrument. And because of my background in art history, I know that printers used soot for lamp black. So they could make a pigment and make color out of it. So they would also harvest the trees for pigment.
Interesting. So you're having this book
signing at the library.
Book release or at the museum.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's right. They aren't together anymore. at the museum, they're graciously hosting it, and I hope everybody shows up just to take a peek and I can see them.
And are you going to have any kind of slide presentation or discussion?
Hopefully, depending on the media room there at the library where they have the
museum. The museum.
It's a museum. Thank you.
Sorry.
I can't get that out of my head. It's been there since 1967. So I do remember that part.
Oh, that's true. That was the old library. There you go. That's why.
So hopefully we'll have a loop of the pictures and other pictures that aren't in the book.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
Mm-hmm. I see your wall of T-shirts out there, and I encourage people to come in and buy one of their favorite show for $20 for last-minute Christmas gifts because there's some real good show T-shirts out there, Book Talk.
Thank you for that plug. Yeah, we do have T-shirts for each of our locally hosted shows, not like the national ones as well.
Go ahead and lift that.
Okay, and she's handing me the, what do we call that?
Fire carriers.
Fire carrier. And this is interesting. It's all covered with barnacles. So this is something you found.
Oh, I never dig anything up.
I'm saying like outside your home or something.
Yeah, this is on the beach.
And it definitely has a indentation that was a hole. I guess it's not a full hole, but
it's a receptacle for an amber.
But it's definitely was clearly carved out or somehow chipped out. And it's very round. And the same, the other one, it almost looks like a potato,
avocado?
Like a potato skin. Potato skin where you scoop it out.
Yeah, scoop it out.
But it's shaped kind of in that shape.
And it came with these burn marks. And you can tell that it's chipped out. And how they chipped it out was to put the certain kind of rock in a fire, heat it up, drop cold water on it. That made it brittle. And then they chip it out.
And I have to say, I've not seen that type of rock before. So interesting.
You will now.
Yeah, now I'll start noticing.
Because that's when I started noticing after somebody pointed out they were oil lamps.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Mary Ida Hendrickson, again, her book release is Saturday, December 16th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. at the Tongass Historical Museum. And you can learn more about the mystery of the fire trees of Southeast Alaska.